Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity today to speak to Brady Kiesling. He is a former political counselor of the U.S. Embassy in Athens. He's been working for the United States Foreign Service for almost 20 years, was stationed in Israel, Washington, Morocco, and Armenia. And the reason that we're speaking today is, and you don't hear me talking to too many people working for the American government usually, but you, Brady Kiesling, just resigned from the Foreign Service, writing a letter that I got over the internet a while ago. I think your resignation, you said, was, and that's what you did, was resign because you were displeased. Well, why don't you share with the audience? I'm sure you can do a better job than I, but I think it's a great what you've done.
The reason I resigned this past month was I became convinced that I could not in good conscience do the job I was being paid to do, to represent United States policy overseas, specifically in Greece. I had come to the conclusion that the policies we were following did not accurately reflect American values, but also that they ran against America's interests in the world. And I found it just impossible to maintain my own personal satisfaction and defend the policies that we had just adopted. What triggered the resignation was the decision to go to war with Iraq.
And today, or yesterday, I don't know when we start counting, is, well, of course, we've been, the United States has been bombing Iraq for the past 12 years, but it just got worse, and it just became officially a war, I guess we call it, last night or today. So it's a pretty intense time around here where we are anyway. The streets in San Francisco are filled with people blocking the streets and really protesting. And a lot of the people in the United States have been protesting this war as or attack. I keep saying the word war, but it's really not a war when you don't have two sides. Well, of course, you have two sides after somebody's attacked, but and people all over the world have been protesting, so you have joined those people. It must have been a difficult decision for you to make.
It was a difficult decision. We have genuinely some real problems regarding Iraq. Those problems were important, they were grave, they needed to be dealt with, but there exist international mechanisms for dealing with such problems. We had managed to achieve in the United Nations a strong consensus that I believe would have led to meeting all of our concerns with Iraq without going to war. It's a difficult process, obviously. For me, I am not by nature a pacifist. I believe there are times when violence is necessary, or at least the credible threat of violence. But the United States has an obligation to the world to resort to violence only as a genuine last resort, and only after all alternatives have been explored.
What do you think is the real deal? Why do you think that President-elect Bush is so intent on demolishing Iraq, or that's how it seems to me?
He's not intent on demolishing Iraq. I believe he genuinely thinks that Iraq is a threat to America's interests. I believe that it is, in fact, a worthwhile thing if democracy can be brought to Iraq. My reservation there is the United States, for various reasons, is not the country that can bring that about at any reasonable cost to the people of Iraq. I believe it is a worthwhile goal that Iraq not have weapons of mass destruction. I don't know what weapons Iraq has, but I do believe that the United Nations was following a reasonable course to finding those weapons if they existed and dealing with them.
Well, there's a lot of countries that we know for sure have weapons of mass destruction. So you think that there's something? What do you think is a particular reason that we should be concerned about Iraq?
We have a lot of history with Iraq, not a very happy history. We made the mistake of helping Iraq at a time when it had launched a stupid war, a stupid and evil war with Iran. We intervened basically to maintain the balance of power in the region. We paid a price later when Iraq miscalculated our interests and the world's interest when it invaded Kuwait, and we were forced into a war with them, you know, which cost many thousands of lives. I blame the Gulf War entirely on Saddam Hussein. He should not have invaded Kuwait, and our removing him Kuwait was perfectly justifiable. But that said, we have an obligation to work with the region to improve it by peaceful means if we can.
Well, my impression was that the United States encouraged Saddam to invade Kuwait and then suddenly switched around. But we probably have a lot of different ideas about things. But so I don't want to keep asking, you know, I'm interviewing you because I respect that you did resign. So I don't want to keep putting you on the spot. But I would like to have an answer to that. And then I'll ask you some other kinds of questions.
I think that a lot of the easy answers for why we are going to war with Iraq are probably wrong. I don't believe it's about oil. I don't believe it's about business profits. I believe, however, that it's based on a totally wrong assumption that the United States can impose its will on the world, can make the world a safer place for us unilaterally. I believe that we live in a world that is now so interconnected that the only legitimate means and the only successful means of making the world safer and better are multilateral means through either existing organizations such as the United Nations, NATO, the European Union, the World Trade Organization, or else there may be times when we need to build new organizations. However, the example of the Kyoto Protocol, the example of the International Criminal Court, proved to me that this administration is unwilling to give up any shred of American sovereignty in the interests of an international system that will protect the whole world's interests as opposed to purely America's.
And as you yourself have said, I think even these things that are supposed to be in the interest of the United States, or maybe they're in the interest of some people in the United States, but they're not really in the interest of the people in the United States, because people are saying, well, this is going to, reasonably so, this is going to make us much less safe. And we all live in you mentioned the Kyoto agreements, that we all live in the same planet and, you know, with the same climate change, with climate change and global warming and all these different things that are happening. So it's Bush that's decided to ignore that.
President Bush is not operating in a vacuum. President Clinton also realized that he would not be able to pass the Kyoto Protocol through the existing Congress. But at least President Clinton recognized that this was a bad thing and was somewhat apologetic about it. What I find most offensive is that we have managed to convince such a large part of the world's population that we are selfish and evil, that we have abandoned the idealism and the principles that America always thought it stood for. I don't think we have abandoned those principles, but I believe our government has retreated from them in a way that that has damaged us. It is not good for America's interests that so much of the world should be afraid of us. When the world is afraid of us, when there is a crisis where the United States has the most powerful, the richest, the most well-organized for projecting power country in the world, there are times when we must lead. If we stand up to lead on a legitimate issue and the world has no faith in us, the world will not follow, and we will not be able to play the necessary role that sometimes we have to play.
I assume that you must have discussed this with people in the Foreign Service. You were Brady Kiesling, you were political counselor of the United States Embassy in Athens. You were going to tell me about what that means, political counselor?
As political counselor, I was the chief of the political section of the embassy. Any embassy is divided up in political, economic, consular section, administrative section, public diplomacy, usually commercial sections, a military attaché, a whole range of U.S. foreign policy interests reflected in the organization of the embassy. And I was in charge of the section that attempted to understand what was happening in Greece and to explain to the ambassador and to the State Department how we could best promote U.S. interests with the Greeks. And that meant maintaining good connections with Greek political parties, with the Greek foreign ministry, with journalists, with academics. It's a wonderful job. You talk to a lot of people. You need to know how people think in the country and understand how their own thoughts about the United States are developing. And in my case, because I had this long history with Greece, because I had served there twice and because I'd been a student there before, I could see how Greece was evolving.
You speak Greek?
I speak Greek. I read Greek. Read the Greek newspapers. I watch Greek news programs. And I could talk to a pretty broad range of the population. And what I realized is that over the past 3 years or so, a lot of our traditional friends in Greece have ceased to believe in us, have come to the conclusion that we've gone off on our own direction, and that the values, the sort of universal values that Greece is gradually coming to adopt as a member of the European Union, they don't think that the United States shares anymore.
Or you were in a hard position working for the U.S. government, probably being expected to defend something you didn't feel you could defend.
Much of the time it was not so difficult. A lot of Greeks had views of the United States that were really, quite wrong and unfairly negative, and I had no problem trying correcting those views. I mean, I'm convinced now that when we're going into Iraq, it's not as, new imperialists or the like. That said, there were some arguments that I did not enjoy making simply because I knew that I could not count on our administration to, to back them up in practice. We were making assurances of that Iraq would be a better place in the end. Those assurances we cannot make without a political and a financial commitment over years or decades that it's very hard for me to imagine are making and keeping.
So you discussed this with your superiors before you resigned in the Foreign Service, or would you be willing to share a little bit about that? The process that you went through to come to this conclusion of resigning from a job it sounds like you generally liked?
It was a pretty personal process. I had some discussions with colleagues and at the end with my superiors, but gradually over time, just as I watched the administration, it became clear to me that the problem was not so much the State Department. If the problem had been the State Department, there are existing mechanisms for challenging the policy and sometimes changing it. But it seemed to me that at the level of the White House and the cabinet generally, a whole different attitude had come into place regarding America's role in the world, a very tough unilateral attitude, which is essentially said that we are powerful, we can do what we want to, our friends should either help us or get out of the way. There was no sense that there could be the usual give and take, the attempt to preserve the interests of our allies simultaneously with our own.
And this was a change as far as you were concerned in your career of almost 20 years in the Foreign Service?
Definitely. There are ups and downs in any diplomatic career, and I think I enjoyed my service most when I was in countries like Armenia, where our interests were not particularly great, where the foreign policy process, at least of the administration, sort of left us alone. And there we did a certain amount to promote democracy and human rights, to try to reform our economy, to help solve the Nagorno-Karabakh dispute between Armenia and Azerbaijan. It was satisfying work. It was difficult. The progress we made wasn't enormous, but one had the sense that America was playing an important role and a positive role.
John Brady Kiesling, you lived in Morocco also and in Israel. You were working in the Foreign Service. So you've had this foreign experience in the Foreign Service. I guess you're saying that you've seen a lot of change in attitudes toward the United States. Of course, the whole role of Israel, a lot of people blame Israel for a lot of what's going on now in the Israeli lobby inside the United States. Do you want to comment on that?
That's a difficult question, because I believe the Israelis themselves are not of a single mind about what the right course of action is. I believe that fundamentally America and Israel have a common interest in finding a viable peace process that creates a Palestinian state. We have a shared interest in building up a Palestinian authority with real ability to govern it, govern itself, and to provide security for Israel. I don't believe, however, that Israeli government policy has effectively pursued that vision, and I sometimes think that the United States has been far too uncritical in its support for each specific Israeli government at the expense of Israel's broader interests as identified by, I think, most of the Israeli people.
So what's going to happen now, do you think, with the UN? And you're saying that you're very sorry and you would have a strong preference for the United States exhausting other kinds of possibilities before going in a violent way. Is that what you're saying? Am I misrepresenting you? So you could speak for yourself, Brady Kiesling.
I think we missed an opportunity to achieve what we needed to achieve with Iraq peacefully. Now, of course, the war has begun. As a patriotic American who believes in his country, I pray that the war will be very quick, very painless. Saddam will flee immediately. We can declare victory and we can start the process of rebuilding. That said, we have a lot of other issues besides Iraq. We have damaged our relations around the world. We have damaged the United Nations. The rebuilding process in Iraq will need our friends. It will need the United Nations. It will need the European Union. We will have to work to build the bridges that we damaged to these organizations. We will, I believe that we will come to realize very soon that we have poisoned the climate of relations with several of our allies, even those that took part in the group, in the coalition with us officially. Their own populations are so angry at us and at their own governments that a lot of countries will hesitate for a very long time in the future before joining with us in anything, no matter how worthwhile it might be.
Maybe I missed something, but excuse me if I just am not remembering. I don't have such a great memory. You answered the questions about why we should so much, you think the United States, that it makes sense to go particularly after Saddam Hussein in Iraq, when there's so many countries that have weapons of mass destruction, and he hasn't really done anything to us.
this is not a campaign that I would have considered to be our top priority. I don't believe that the threat to the United States from Saddam's regime was as important as a number of other issues that confront us in the world at this time. I'm not going to try to justify that decision. I'm simply saying now that we have gone to war, we have no choice but to bring it to the most painless conclusion we can. I'm afraid that means the war will continue, Saddam will be deposed, there will be a reconstruction of Iraq. Let us pray that this is a real reconstruction with a real democracy. I believe that the United States is committed to that. Whether we have the capability to bring it about, I am somewhat skeptical, but we have undertaken a commitment to create a unified federal democratic state in Iraq that benefits its own people. We had better try. We had better do it.
Well, I think we need to worry about democracy inside this country, as a matter of fact, because one of the things that's happening is a lot of repressive, a lot of shredding, a lot of repression, a lot of shredding of the Constitution and our rights within the United States. But that's my opinion, and not only my opinion, but I wonder, Brady Kiesling, what you think should be the priorities. You said it wouldn't have been your priority. So I'm curious, as a political counselor in the Foreign Service for these years and living in these countries in the Middle East and Europe, what do you think should be the priorities?
I accept the president's emphasis that we must protect the American people from terrorism. In my view, the only good starting point from that is a real engagement with the Middle East that redresses the current balance and persuades the populations of the Middle East that the United States is not their enemy. I know it was never our intention to present ourselves as the enemy of the Muslim peoples of the, you know, of the Middle East, but like it or not, we are now perceived almost uniformly in the Middle East as one-sidedly in favor of the Israeli position and as not a force for a just settlement of the Palestinian problem. We need to redress that image. We need to engage with the states of the region in a more wholesome way. To fight terrorism, we need to accept that there are issues besides terrorism where our engagement is vital. There's a paradox in the Middle East that we need strong, effective states there as partners in the war against terrorism. This causes, you know, we have not addressed the paradox of apparent contradiction between human rights and effective counterterrorism, but we need to do it. One of my worries about the war in Iraq is that, for example, we now have fairly good cooperation with Pakistan at the intelligence and law enforcement level in finding al-Qaeda. I believe finding al-Qaeda is a completely legitimate aim after September 11th and even before, considering the American embassies that were bombed in Africa. I lost colleagues of mine in East Africa, and the perpetrators should be punished. But to do so, we need a political environment in Pakistan that will sustain this cooperation. You know, Mr. Musharraf has a very delicate situation. He's not an elected leader. He is has a population that is not pleased with the United States for a number of reasons. We have to be very careful in how we handle that issue. I believe that the war in Iraq puts Musharraf in a very difficult position. I'm not sure how we're going to help him or help restore better relations with Pakistan, the kind of relationship you need to sustain the war against terrorism.
You also said that you didn't think that invading Iraq was about oil. Did you say you thought it was about bringing democracy? I'm kind of going back again, and we're just about out of time, but I wonder what you do think it's about.
I think it's about creating a sense of American security. I believe that sense of American security has very little to do with the real facts on the ground in Iraq. But oil is at best a footnote in the decision. I don't believe that American policy is dictated by the oil companies. I believe that democracy was an afterthought. It's something that we find ourselves morally committed to. If we dismantle Iraq, we need to provide something in its place. The motivations behind going to war have not been made clear to the American people or to the world, and that is a crucial problem for us. Most people in Greece think it's about oil or about this assertion of American dominance. The assertion of American dominance seems to be a factor and a very negative factor for our own interests in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a lot of people think it's an empire about being boss of the world, basically.
Well, no one has ever been successfully boss of the world for very long, and the effort of trying tends to gather the rest of the world against one. It saddens me greatly to think that there are many people in Europe who are quietly praying for our armies to suffer, massive casualties just to give us a bloody nose and remind us that we are not all powerful. Obviously, no one, I hope, in America shares that hope. We must hope for, a bloodless victory, but we have to think why there is such fear and resentment of the United States that people, ostensibly our allies, are hoping for our discomfiture.
One real quick last question, Brady Kiesling. Have you gotten a lot of bad reactions from the State Department? And what kind of reactions are you getting publicly from your resignation from the Foreign Service?
Most of the reactions have been very positive. My Foreign Service colleagues, those who know me, have been quietly supportive or at least sympathetic. There's a lot of shared concern about the way our policy is expressed and about even the nature of the policy. It's not uniform. There are people in the Foreign Service who strongly disagree with me as well. That said, I think a very, very large number of people find that my resignation and the letter I sent helped them express concerns that they had already begun to feel and concerns that they think need to be addressed by the administration to assure that our place in the world is a place in people's affections, not a place in people's fears.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Brady Kiesling, former political counselor of the U.S. Embassy in Athens, who has resigned. You have resigned because you're not pleased with the present situation. Thank you very much for this interview. And my name's Sue Supriano. Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.